Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for December 20th, 2017. We got, looks like six folks, including myself, here right now. I got Theo, Gordon, Benoit, Matthias, Kodak, and me, Sean. Joe might be along later. We'll see. Let's go ahead and dive in on these. Our first PR to look at is 2424, which before we started, Theo and I were talking because he'd requested a change. He just approved it. I'd say, Theo, should we, just in case, let's let this, just to make sure I didn't mess anything up, let's let this run through CI, and then if that's good, then we can squash and merge it. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so I'll let Mikhail know that I made the I made the requested change that Theodis asked for. If this passes CI, should, then it can be squashed and merged. Okay, all right, that one that we started off on. So let's see, what else do we have for pull requests here? Okay, we got, what do we got? 2443. This looks like, I guess it's documentation for the array class. It's kind of lacking in, commit comment there on it. Matthias, did I see you had taken a look at this?
Yes, yes. So I'm in contact with Swayful, and but I welcome everybody to have a look. And if you have any special concern that should be documented, that should be well known about the array class, and just add a comment.
So, okay, yeah. Let's see. This should be. Yeah, there's, so I can see a couple minor formatting things here. Let's see. Let me check here. So I don't know if it really closes the ticket, but it's certainly an improvement, and we could merge it. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
And there was like, I had a look. There's also some grammatical stuff. I just have a deep look again after the sync.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What did you say?
There was some grammatical issues. That I'm going to comment on, and then I can also update it. So that's fine.
So, let's see. So, otherwise, it looks like Let's see. A couple of small formatting things. So let's see. I'm not sure. Like, I don't think that the multi-line comment here on 11 is really necessary. That seems completely tangential to how do you use an array, right?
Yeah. It's more language thing, and it's also already in the tutorial.
Yeah. Wait, the exact amount of memory needed for one unit of space depends on the type of elements the array can hold. Do you know what that's supposed to mean?
It's about the exact amount the array allocates in bytes depends on what each element needs to allocate.
I don't understand how that's related. I.
It's just like mentioning that there's no constant amount allocated. So if you allocate memory for strings, then so I guess it's actually wrong, isn't it?
So this would be like, for example, I think that the point this is trying to convey is, for example, that an array of U8s would take less space than an array of U64 for the same size, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Right. Okay. I think that could certainly be cleaned up, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's see. Space allocation change went out. The space allocated can change when elements are added or removed from an array. So this next section is here on 58. What's this trying to... I'm unclear what's happening here. Like,
So it's trying to describe that the array is dynamically allocating new memory as elements added, and that it always progresses in powers of two.
There's some code here that says like wombat size equals 8, but it's a comparison that's never used. So
beforehand it was like a unit test, and excerpt from a unit test that they asserted on the size being 8. So that's just trying to show that that the size actually is 8. Could also be added in a comment afterwards. So. But maybe this should be rather explained in some piece of text than in an example like this.
Yeah, I just added a comment to the effect.
And also, like some of the examples below should be moved to the actual methods they describe.
Yeah. Can you give a comment to that effect? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think a lot of these, it's like, hey, okay, here's how you can use each of these methods. That should be down below. And this should be more of a general, an overview of what's available to do for stuff, right? Like what methods you should be looking for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can you leave a note to that effect?
I will. Yes.
Okay, let's see. What else do we got here? Hey Benoit, we got one of yours. Add deferred reification. What do we got here? Yes, compiler change. I'm certainly not qualified to comment on that. I'm not really a compiler person. Gordon, if you had a look at this, it's, sorry, I forgot the number. I'm a little tired today. 2423?
No, I'm afraid I haven't.
Could you have a look at it and if maybe sign off on it and we could give it a merge?
Yeah, probably Joe would have more expertise.
Okay, so let's leave that for Joe. Ask. Sorry, Benoit.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, added Joe. Add test reporting to Travis CI. Huh, what's this? This is 2417. Oh, right. Yeah, this is the thing from something called Test Space. Has anybody else looked at this? Oh.
So this seems to produce XML output from the G-test.
Yeah, I took a look at it. I'm not sure what we would use it for. I don't know. If everybody else could take a chance, we don't have to look at it right now, but if everybody could take a chance to actually go through and look at the link that's there for number 4 and take a look at it and see if there's anything there where we might be interested or not, let me know and we could talk about it next time. Also, wait. Wait, so Mikhail opened two PRs for the array documentation. There's also 2414, Matthias. Should this one be closed, I guess? The second PR? 2414, which seems to be, it looks like it's a duplicate at this point, or it's a subset of 2433. So I'm going to close that. All right, looks like then has anybody had a look at 2415? Let's take a look at that. Support open SSL 1.1. So what do we have here?
This basically enables us if we have open necessary API comp, if we have the environment or the property set, it enables a pony to be compiled with open necessary. And that one on the cost, with the cost of needing to define that parameter.
Well, so if I define that, then it would work with 1.1 right now, otherwise it would continue to work as is. Yes?
Yes.
So in the makefile one here on line 321, it seems to be defining OpenSSL directory user lib. Does anybody know what's going on with that, where it's like /user/lib?
It's not even used.
It's used immediately afterwards to say if it's not if you can't find it, then wait. Is this explained? I mean, this looks like it's saying, like, if it can't find the OpenSSL library in user lib, then use 1.1, which doesn't strike me as the right way to go about doing this.
Yes.
Here, I'm going to leave a note to that effect. So, does anybody have any thoughts on I think it would make sense that we want the user to opt into using which particular version of SSL they want to use, but that there should be a default, which is the current one, which would be what gets used when we build the packages. But then you could select to use one. Sorry, not package. By packages, I mean like the Debian packages, RPM packages, etc. And then you could opt to use 1.1 if you're building from source. Does that seem like the right way to go about this?
So if I understand the SSL package correctly, it's like calling SSL via HSI and binaries created using NetSSL are linked against libSSL, right?
Oh, wait. So yeah, you're right. So I see it's if it can find. Oh, okay, I see. So it's checking in the user lib directory. It's going to try and find an open SSL, and it's trying to figure. It's probing to see whether it's 1.1 or 1, right? And then otherwise, it falls back to 1.0. That's the idea here, right? That seems to actually be the idea.
Yes, so it tries to look in user lib and lib Linux GNU, libx86, yes.
But
so it has limited support for machines where OpenSSL 1.1 is installed in either user lib or lib x86 64 Linux GNU.
So, but then it defines, so in all of the build stuff here, though, it defines OpenSSL API compatibility. This seems to be,
so that means if you have a program that you compile on the machine with OpenSSL 1.1 and you want to support it, you need to define this flag always in your Pony program makefile or wherever.
Wait, what? Like I'm confused, for example, like why does it need to pass this OpenSSL API compat when we're building docs, for example?
Otherwise, if the machine has OpenSSL 1.1, it wouldn't find those, for example, EVPMD CTX new function, which was renamed from create. And so.
But in the docs one, 940, right? It defines OpenSSL API compatibility. And why does it do that? I don't see what that's doing. We have this if not defined in the make file, and then it seems to be defining this for, and then it's not used anywhere when it's defined. I'm not sure what's happening with that.
So this OpenSSL API compat is used in the packages crypto and packages NetSSL.
I don't see where it's used in there. I see OpenSSL API compat _1.1.0, but that
exactly.
It's else.
That's the value of that variable, of that make file variable. So OpenSSL API compat is either OpenSSL API compat 1.0.0 or OpenSSL compared to 1.1.0.
Okay. Right, okay, I see. So that's getting... I don't know. This feels like what? Every time I want to build docs, I have to tell it which OpenSSL one.
And every time you compile any Pony program.
I would have to find this every time I compile a Pony program.
If you want to use OpenSSL 1.1, yes.
But if I don't want to, then I don't have to.
Exactly.
So why when we build the docs here on 940 again, do we have to pass this? Like this is gonna set this when we go ahead and we generate our documentation, for example.
Yes. So I don't know if we can leave it out or if there's any if I calls are already evaluated to the expression pass. I'm not sure. So if it works without, we can safely remove it, I guess. We shouldn't need to define it when building docs, definitely. I'm also not 100% satisfied with this approach. So, like my dream would be to make it dynamically detectable which version we have, and based on this, make the right calls. But I also don't know if or how this is possible. So I didn't have a pretty deep look. Into this.
So.
But there's also already a lengthy discussion on the issue that's linked. It's 1838.
So Joe, at least in this, seems to have a lot of the same worries that I have about this approach right now, right? I'm gonna mark this as needs discussion. I'd like to. Joe has some seems to have some thoughts on it. I'd like to discuss with him, right, to go through the ramifications of this. Okay. At minimum for this, I would want to see, rather than having these ifdefs be sprinkled through all the classes, I'd want to pull those differences together into a primitive at the least, right? For some stuff, I'm not particularly comfortable with, and the having to define it and pass it along. I think they're, want to look at that some more. But I think also wrapping that into some pony int functions might be a better idea as well. So let's go ahead and I'll mark that as for next time we can move along. So our last one, 2386. This is Dippin's dynamic scheduler based on workload. So Benoit, this looked good to you, yeah? I see.
Yes.
I'm not 100% comfortable with the approach of the using the signals on this, but on the other hand, this does solve a couple of really nasty edge cases where you can have memory run out of control. So I'm good with doing this as a I'm good with doing this now and merging it, and we could come back and potentially do other changes for it later. Does that sound good to everyone? Everybody on board with merging this? Benoit, you good with it?
I'm not familiar with the way POSIX nodes work, so if you really have concerns about that, so
signals give me the heebie-jeebies in general, it seems to work, so I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it going in for now.
Okay, so the parts with atomics and all that stuff looks good to me. So,
I mean, worst case scenario, we can change the means of communication, right? Like, that's really the only part that has me going, the rest of the scheduler stuff looks good. Gordon, you good with this?
Yep.
Matthias?
Yes.
Theo?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Squash and merge. Okay. Nice long commit. Message. Let's see. Let's see. Okay, I need to make sure I get the commit message right here when I merge all these together. Hold on. While I'm doing this, does anybody have anything they want to bring up or go over as we're at that point in time? Come on, somebody buy me some time. Bring up something they want to talk about. Save me.
So there is some issue I would like to have discussed, but it's marked as a discussion item, so we maybe get to it anyway.
Bring it up. Bring it up.
Bring it up. Bring it up. Boom. 2429. It's so Luke Cheeseman came up with something about the U size and I size and U long and I long, so these platform dependent integer types. So just to make sure they do vary on based on that platform. Most of the time they should be 64 bits. But for some it's 32. So
which issue is this? Sorry.
2429.
2420. Oh, okay. No. Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. So it's about when initializing this one with literals, we usually have an overflow check for all the other numeric literals. So if literal value is too big for like a U8 or U16 or I32, so we get an error. Not so for U size, because in the case where the platform limits it to 32 bytes, but the in expression in literal.c, we hard code the maximum size to 64 bits. And so so we get some overflows when a user is initialized with a literal here. So, and there are two approaches Joe brought up. One is to just define this value platform dependent as it should be. So that would result in a pony program compiled on like a 64-bit platform, like might run fine with such a literal, but on I386 architecture, for example, then it might not, because U size has a different size. And so this is the one approach leading to different compilation behavior on different platforms in this edge case. The other one is checking if such a literal is defined in an ifdef that's matching on the platform, like ILDP32, for example. And if so, use the value that's safe for that platform, and otherwise fall back to the value that's safe for any platform. So it's a little bit involved. So basically fall back to 32 bits as it's safe for any platform, and only allow 64 bits if you if this literal is within, this literal assignment is within an ifdef that's matching on the platform, so it's making it safe. That's the second approach. Maybe I explained it not really good, but I'm really in for the first one. And I just wanted to actually chosen it here, unfortunately. But maybe what's your take on this? If there's anybody has an opinion here.
I haven't thought about this at all, so I don't have a take on it right now. Anybody else?
I think the most reasonable option would be to use the ifdef if the value would be greater than what could be stored in 32 bits. If it can be stored in 32 bits, then you don't require the ifdef. Otherwise, it would. Does that make sense?
Um, So where would I apply the IFDEF in the Pony program? So
in the program.
Okay, so that would actually not require any compiler change, would it?
No.
So
the compiler would have to complain if the value, the compiler would have to tell the user that the assignment requires an IFDEF. But it will only complain if the value is greater than what could be stored on 32 bits.
Yes, yes. So, yeah.
So the user would be forced to either pick a value that would be okay for 32-bit platforms, or they would have to throw a compiler error and say they're just not supporting that platform.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically number two. Yes. So I think we can conclude this one with using number two, which makes sense for me, but it's getting a little bit involved on the compiler side. So I would vote for number one because of its simplicity and making platform dependency more explicit and visible.
I was under the impression that option one would be more difficult to implement in the compiler.
No, so in my point of view, it's only setting the constant max value in literal.c to the one that the QN platform supports. So it's actually just an IFDEF in the literal.c.
Okay. If that's the case, then I'd be fine with option one.
So, in the case of option one, right? With the example that Luke gave, okay?
Yes. Yes.
Where I set the U size to something that might be out of range, right? On some platforms or whatever.
Yes. Yes.
With option one, can't I still do that because it's not specifically UMAX size? I see. If I set it to this.
So it's currently it's not. So the U size max value, for example, is 32 bits on if the platform supports 32 bits and 64 bits otherwise. But the value that handles the expression overflow check, that is a literal overflow check, is always 64 bytes.
Okay.
And the simplest change, which is number two, and number one here, is to just make this literal overflow check use the platform dependent type.
I haven't put a ton of thought into this, but from trying to catch up and read through this, number one seems like Joe's number one seems like the one I'm in favor of.
Yeah. So, but the drawback that he mentions and he's against is that it would compile, on one platform, the program might raise an error, while on the other platform not. So I'm fine with this. Just wanted to make it explicit.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point.
There is also the issue of cross compilation with the solution one, because if you're on a 64 byte architecture and you try to compile for a 32 byte architecture, if we implement solution one, then we won't get a compiler error, but since you're compiling to a 32-byte architecture, then it would still be technically an error since it will overflow on the destination platform. So I think personally in favor of solution two.
Can you put that, because you just convinced me, Benoit? Can you add that to the issue? There you go.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Yes. I'm like, I don't want to deal with if devs. And then you make a really valid point of, yes, but Sean, you're being a lazy ass. Stop that. Okay, that's not what you said, but that's how my brain interpreted it. Is Sean, stop being a lazy ass. Listen to Benoit. He's got a really good point there.
Okay, I'll make a comment on the issue.
All right. Does anybody have anything else that they want to go over? And wait, okay, I think that would be, I don't think that needs discussion during sync now. Would we agree with that? We've got that. I think we've reached a consensus here. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
And then enhancement ready for work. Okay, I'll update that while Ben was going to put the appropriate comments. Let's see. Let's see. Okay, there's that one, which I'll bring up in a minute. Let me know when you're done putting that all in, because I have something to ask you, Benoit.
Okay, I'm writing that.
Yeah. Kodak, did you have any questions on 2291 at this point, or are you feeling good about moving forward with that?
Yeah, I think I can move forward. Just if someone know, I give it a look, and I don't know yet how to retrieve the directory with the documentation. The documentation when building. So you told me on IRC that there is a way in the compiler to get basically any folder that is generated. So I know it's possible, but I don't know how to do it yet. So if someone knows, please tell me. Otherwise, I think I will find it anyway. But
yeah, I never actually went looking for that. Does anybody know a good place to point Kodak to for where this code in the compiler that he can look at for how we'd be able to find where doc support is? Like the same way, you know, that we can find where packages are, et cetera, for the installation directory?
Sorry, I didn't... what are you looking for exactly?
So as of the last release, there's some support files that are used for generating documentation, which get put in the Pony installation directory in docs-support. And he's wondering how he can locate that directory, like in the same way, you know, that we're able to locate, you know, the packages directory. I believe there's something in the compiler that knows, where its build path is, but I didn't have a chance to go looking for it.
Okay. Let me take a look.
It should be like that's it gets passed in by path, right? When we first get created. It's that path variable which ends up in opt paths.
Yeah, it's opt output. So
yeah.
I'm looking where that is coming from.
Opt output, that comes from, yeah, the output the output arg, which is required when we build. Wait, no, that's not, it's not the output one, it's the path one that we want, right? Not output. It would be it's opt paths. That's the one that would that doc support should be an opt paths. Because packages would be there, lib would be there, etc.
Yeah, but I think one is built from the other.
It looks like output also gets passed in as a command line variable. Packages.addPaths, handle path list.
Wait, we are looking for the doc support directory, that's right?
Yeah, which is at the same level as lib and whatnot. So package init uses
Oh, it's in the Ponisse installation. Okay, I thought we were talking about the documentation directory that were generated with the.
No. It's with bin, lib, etc. All of that. Yeah, it's in the installation directory. That's why we're talking past each other.
Yes. Yeah. So, I don't know where that is coming from.
It appears to come from dash dash path in the make file. I think it seems to be a required argument in main.c. Or actually, no, that's wrong. Never mind. That is not correct. Sorry, I was thinking about something entirely different. So
I think it's simply copied from the Ponisse repository, the .docs file directory.
Well, yeah, it is, but then it's the how from inside the compiler can we know where that directory is in order to find it.
Yeah, so the question is how does the compiler find its installation directory?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so that's, I think we have to look at how it's finding the built-in directory.
Yep.
So that would be in package.c in load program, I think.
It's in package init. There's a call for package add magic source built in. But how does that work? That's interesting.
Isn't the static bool add exactir function that take care of that in package.c?
Which one?
Add exactir, add underscore exact underscore dir.
That's the directory that we're running from as compared to where the installation directory is.
So it don't assume that the directory it's running from is where the compiler is?
Correct.
Okay.
That's where a given program might be running from. Wow, I know it does this in here somewhere.
Yeah, it does.
I think I
knew that not so long ago.
I did at 1.2. Okay, wait. So get our base directory. Check out what it does and find Wow, this is quite a thing that it does, I think. Do you see what find path does in package.c, Benoit?
On which line is it?
Find path starts on 389.
Okay, I found it. So
I mean, it literally seems to be basically just walking from, you give it a place and it walks from it, which is interesting.
Yeah, it looks like it.
But then how does it, it's got to be in relation to, check pony packages from, I don't know, ask the system. Okay, so that checks to see, how does it decide? I don't see where this gets called by anything else. That's, I only see it. Oh, wait, here we go. Package load, find magic package, full path, this path, package load. Got to normalize the name, fine.
I used to know this.
I feel very silly at the moment. All right, well, how about Benoit, you and I can keep looking, and hopefully one of us finds it. We can drop it on the issue.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we're at end of time then. Sorry, Kodak. We will look for it. All right.
Yeah. Thanks.
Does anybody have anything else before we call it?
You mentioned that you wanted to ask me something.
Oh, right. Yes. Issue 1186. Did you ever open a bug for that with LLVM?
It's the bug where with the exception code generation.
Seg fault in string find.
Yeah, I think that's this one. No, I didn't open a.
Okay, reminding you again.
I think I should put some paper sheet with the thing written in big letters on my computer screen.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to forget again.
Okay. All right, that's it, folks. Thank you for coming, and see you next week for the folks who are around.